new steps to bring the Democrats back. Will they work? How the state Senate will attempt to revive the GOP agenda. A staff shakeup for the Secretary of State. Democrats turn on Eben Bay, and Mitch Daniels finds a pair of Washington stages. That, plus a unique protest at the State House and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 18, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, the Republicans in the Indiana House voted to raise the fines being levied against absent Democrats whose walkout is now in its fourth week. Daily fines against the Democrats go from $250 to $350 starting Monday. Republicans also gave the House Speaker the authority to collect those fines, even if it requires wages to be garnished from a lawmaker's private sector job. It's a move that prompted this exchange regarding the Republican agenda and the desire for Democrats to return so it can be approved.
How dare you, quite frankly, how dare you leave Hoosiers who have spoken so loudly that these are the things they care about?
This is a harsh movement. This is a poke in the eye. This will not accomplish that.
We will be considering a censure motion next Monday. We have not desired to do that to this point. That's a permanent reprimand.
What will be the effect of the higher fines? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Luke Messer. John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is this enough pain to cause some Democrats to crack?
This isn't what this is all about. I mean, and even Brian Bosma's statement that there are no more negotiations is nonsense. They're close to an agreement, and I think if level heads prevail on this, they'll have an agreement. And I thought Brian Bosma was a lawyer. He has no authority to have a garnishment of a private source of revenue. I mean, maybe he thinks he wears a black robe in his dreams or something, but I mean, I thought he knew more about the law than that. So yeah, I don't think they have any effect other than to make him feel good. And if he really wants resolution, they need to keep negotiating in good faith. They've made progress, and I think they can make enough progress to bring Democrats back.
Well, Brian Bosma says the time for talking is over. They've gone from some concessions, not really large concessions, but essentially this is a change from the carrot to the stick approach, correct?
I guess. I mean, you know, what I believe is that the feelings on both sides are very strong. And you've got folks, from what I observe from the Democrat caucus, who in sincere belief think they're doing the right thing. And when you talk to members of the Republican caucus, I mean, they sincerely believe this is wrong. And I think this is less about some ploy to try to get them back and more about just doing what they believe to be right. The problem is that, you know, we've got a state to run, and eventually we've got to get everybody back to get anything done.
The Democrats, I think it's obvious at this point, are trying to kill the bills that are on the House calendar. 47 of them, they include the voucher bill, the state budget bill. Can they get that done?
Well, I mean, technically, yes, if there's no quorum. There is no bill to be signed by the governor or voted on by the full House and by the Senate. So I guess legally, technically, the Constitution of the state says there has to be a two-thirds quorum. So, yeah, but then it comes down to not only the standoff with House Republicans, but then you have a standoff, as you already do, with the governor's office. And he's already said, you know, made the line a few weeks ago with a comment about having him there up until New Year's if necessary and call him back again and again. So the whole thing really does probably escalate. But, I mean, it's surprising, I think, the action this week, because if, in fact, there was movement, and it appeared that there was some optimism and some movement, it does seem, from a political standpoint, tougher for the Democrats, appear to capitulate.
They dig in because of this.
Well, yeah, I mean, they've already invested, what, almost 4 weeks in this, and it's on principle. Well, they can't politically say, well, okay, now you're really hitting me in the pocketbook. I guess we'll come walking back with our tails between our legs. It's tougher, I think.
By next week, this will become the longest ever walkout from any state legislature in the country. You think they're trying to set the record?
No, I'm sure that they'd just as soon be back if they thought that that was the right thing to do. I'll defer to Ann for the definitive response to that. But, you know, somebody has to intervene here. You've clearly got an impasse. It's not unusual in a negotiated process. The governor has to step in and mediate this, or Senator Long has to step in and mediate this, or some other third party that I just can't imagine right now. But somebody has to be doing that to make the sides find a resolution, and there is resolution possible.
All right, well, let's talk about what Senator Long is doing. The state Senate will begin hearings next week on the state budget and other bills stranded on the House calendar. Senate President Pro Tem David Long said this week that the Democratic walkout is morally wrong.
We're going to go to work, we're going to keep working, we're going to get the job done, and we're going to do it apparently without the House Democrats, who continue to run away from doing their job.
Luke Messer, at some point will the Republicans abandon some of their agenda?
I don't believe they will. And, you know, one of the things you're seeing out of both sides here is both believe that they are right. As Lincoln once said in the Civil War, right, though we may both be wrong, we cannot both be right.
Okay.
And they are not both right. And, you know, I think the what you have seen already is compromise by Republicans on a set of these issues. I do believe this. I don't know that the compromise has been much more than might have been accomplished had they just stayed here. I mean, I think the right to work bill probably went away even if they stayed here. I think many of these amendments would have happened even if they'd stayed here.
Well, this idea, what they're going to do is they're going to take the language of the stranded House bills and put it into House bills that are already over in the Senate. Just by definition, by the number of bills that they've got to deal with, they're going to have to give up some of their agenda, are they?
Well, I think there will be bills that die, and they can have those scalps. I think the key issues that are on the governor's agenda will all survive.
They're trying to send the message that we can accomplish this to some degree. I mean, the Democrats at some point have to come back and vote. But to some degree, we can make the process work without them. Would the Democrats rather be involved?
Sure, they'd rather be involved. And that's what the negotiation is all about. I mean, when we're talking about things that are morally wrong, you know, cutting taxes for the rich, which they're doing in Washington, at the same time they're cutting unemployment benefits for those unemployed, taking collective bargaining rights away, all these things are morally wrong. But the bottom line on this is that both sides have to give. Democrats have to give and Republicans have to give, and there has to be a resolution they can both live with. Nothing's perfect in this. Democrats would rather see the voucher bill go away completely, but they're willing to compromise on that. They're rather to see the common wage issue go away completely. One of the good things about this walkout, if there is anything good about the walkout, is it has focused public attention on bills that were being ramrodded through without a lot of public debate. And the more attention that's being focused on that, the less the people like it. And that's been a very interesting dynamic here, because people are now aware of how bad some of this legislation is.
And if there's one more plus, if you're looking for the silver lining for the Democratic House caucus, it's probably that this has energized its core constituency, labor unions and others, which think about the last election. I mean, the sea change at the ballot box, they're outnumbered 60 to 40 in the House. I think there was sort of a sense of, well, we're back on our heels. This was a way to, I'm not saying they did it for this reason, but it's had the benefit of energizing organized labor and their constituencies. And when, you know, the speaker has talked about the notion of a recall, there are people, he says, clamoring for recall opportunities. It seems to me, even if there's no avenue legally for that now, but
you're not going to get a recall created unless the Democrats come back, and they're not going to come back to vote for that.
Let's say even
it's
if you wait.
Like the speaker's also talking about a new anti-bolting statute
and saying that
might be introduced. Well, you can't get that passed unless the Democrats come back, and that's a recipe for another walkout, right?
Yes, there is a recipe for another walkout. This walkout will end. The end is not in sight. But Ann is absolutely right. It has to be a negotiated settlement. This has gone further than anyone anticipated it would. I think everybody believed that this was a day or two or three The governor's actions right after it happened made you believe that everybody understood you get the right to work bill off and then it goes away. And then it escalated and it's become what we've got, an impasse now. This will end, but the Democrats have really hurt them their opportunity to use a walkout again in the future. And the Republicans have pulled out all the stops in a punitive sense. So they really have to start thinking about the long-term repercussions from this. And if they don't do something soon, they're going to have a problem.
For Luke, I mean, one of the issues here, as I see it, is that you've got a large freshman class of House Republicans who are hardliners. And Speaker Bosma is putting everything to a vote in the caucus. And it seems like there are some freshmen there who think that this is really two sessions, the first and the last.
I don't agree with that. I mean, I recognize there is a group of freshmen who came in here with strong feelings. But I do believe that the Speaker sees a long-term constitutional role here. I mean, we are changing for the future of this state the way this House has done business. Sure, there have been small walkouts and people who've slow-walked the process. But as you've said, we've disappeared for a month and we've left the state to do it. It's not the kind of thing that's happened in the past. The two big issues that I think Republicans would take issue with in comments that have been made is, one, the bar keeps moving. I mean, they feel like they're making progress.
That's the way Pat Bauer negotiates. It's always a moving target.
Yeah, and the bar gets moved away. It's hard. Until you have a target, it's hard. The second thing is this idea that these issues were ramrodded through. I mean, we've had 9-hour debates on bills, and frankly, the walkout has shortened public debate by not having public conversations about it.
You had bills introduced to be voted on the next day that changed 150 years of public education.
We're gonna have to get moving here in a second, but the one issue that's come up this week, the Republicans keep raising questions about who's paying for this walkout, who's paying for the motel rooms in Urbana, Illinois. Who is?
Well, I think some people are paying their own expenses and other people are having them paid by the state committee.
And who's giving the state committee money to make
whoever
that possible?
Whoever gives the state committee money to give it possible, the same places they always raise it.
Well,
it's the same. It's the same issue. Who's behind vouchers? When you look at who Mitch Daniels is taking money from, that guy from Overstock.com put what $500,000 in his reelection campaign to push for vouchers.
I know you got other topics to cover, but John made a real good point that we might want to revisit very quickly, and that is, you know, it does limit the ability of the Democratic caucus to walk out again. And if you look at if there's an official issue that triggers walkouts, it's redistricting. That's what did Senate Democrats in 91. That's what did House Republicans in 2001. And it may, in fact, make it much more difficult for them to, when the official issue comes around, the one that maybe would normally provoke a walkout, they've already played
that
card.
There are those who argue that the Democrats can't get worse maps than they've got
right now.
Well,
that's true.
So, and the Republicans can't protect 60 seats.
Right. All right, moving on. There was a shakeup in the office of Secretary of State Charlie White this week. The legal cloud hanging over Charlie White prompted two of his top administrators to leave the office since Friday without notice. A.J. Feeney Ruiz will plug one of the holes as White's new spokesman, replacing the departed Jason Thomas.
The office needs some help as far as getting back on message, and I really hope to be able to do that as well as help out in a new capacity as Deputy Chief of Staff here.
Jerry Bonnet became White's chief of staff just yesterday. He replaced Sean Kiefer, who quit and departed on Friday. Now Bonnet and Feeney Ruiz promise transparency that includes the release of the Rokita investigation into White's voter registration.
Confident that there aren't going to be any curveballs or anything that come out of it. So just, I mean, let Hoosiers see it, let Hoosiers decide.
John Ketzenberger, what does that shakeup tell you?
Well, things are very volatile in the Secretary of State's office. I was very surprised that the Chief of Staff decided to resign right after that impromptu news conference that the defense attorney for Charlie White really didn't want to happen. And then the spokesman who got thrown under the bus in that news conference quit then on Monday. I think that these are people who feel like, the direction of the office is wrong and they didn't want to be associated with it anymore.
And what's interesting is those are two of the new people that Charlie White brought into the office with him. There are a lot of Rokita holdovers. A.J. Feeney,
Jerry Bonnet's a great replacement.
He's a Rokita holdover.
That's right.
And A.J. has come back to the office. He worked for Todd Rokita. Suddenly it's a Rokita shop again.
Yeah, I mean, there are, clearly, I think you have more experienced people now in those positions, certainly when it comes to election law and those matters. Although I guess it doesn't matter because Charlie White said this week that that's an archaic term. It's that this whole notion that that's the chief election officer. They really don't really do much with elections other than
the fact that that's in the law.
Well, it's in the law and they actually keep all of the...
Maybe one of the comments that prompted the departures.
Perhaps.
golly.
He doesn't even have a question.
Dan, what do you have to say?
I mean, if you're a Republican, you're looking at this, you know, first the guy's under indictment, then he's talking out of school, then everybody's leaving. This isn't good.
It's a very challenging situation. Clearly, the governor and others have come out very strongly with what they believe needs to be done. You know, what you want to see happen is the work of the office continue and that it be done well. And you do take comfort in that these folks who are experienced and have done these jobs before will be able to make the best of a very bad situation.
They're going to release this investigation that Todd Rokita did into Charlie White's voter registration. Is that a good idea?
Oh, I think the more transparency you can bring to this, the better.
Democrats have been demanding a release of this. What do you expect to find?
Oh, I expect to find that Todd Rokita knew that Charlie White was going to be indicted for voter fraud and went ahead and certified his election and kept him on the ballot and everything else. And I certainly hope that these new people coming in have a promise of a job from Todd Rokita in the event that that ship sinks even further, because, you know, it seems to me, other than what Charlie White did to get himself in this situation in the first place, Todd Rokita is primarily responsible for the condition of that office right now, because he should have kicked him off the ballot when he had the opportunity, and he didn't do it.
Moving on, former Indiana Senator Evan Bayh took a job as contributor to Fox News this week. Bayh will be a commentator and political analyst across all of Fox News's platforms. It's a move that has earned the ire of liberals, including Washington Post blogger Ezra Klein, who called Bayh's retirement from the Senate, quote, sad and hypocritical. Bayh has also taken jobs with a Washington law firm and a New York investment firm, prompting Klein and others to accuse him of cashing out. John Schwanis, is Evan Bayh a hypocrite?
Well, certainly Ezra Klein thinks so, and that column he wrote or the blog he wrote has generated a lot of talk about that. I mean, the path he has walked is one that is well trod. You know, I mean, a lot of people go from service in the Senate and the House to these kinds of positions. What I think makes it difficult for him is, and it blows a theory I had, you know, back in February of before last when he announced he wasn't seeking another term, and I thought this was positioning him as sort of the poster boy for reform, that he had the experience, he never lost an election, mm-hmm. So he could say, I know what goes on in Washington, I know how to get things done, but I'm so disgusted with it, like you, dear voter, I'm going to get out of it. And he could have gone, say, to a job in education or the not-for-profit community and not been, quote-unquote, tainted. And that's a strong word. Well,
we're
going to get to you.
You better.
Along those lines, does it appear that he's given up on a political career?
Oh, I think that's an interesting notion. And I guess I would argue that he hasn't given up on a political career. I don't think this signifies anything like that at all, though it probably makes it more difficult among what his base was before, because, you know, he did set himself up to be different from other folks. And what he's doing is not unusual, and that's the problem for him, is that he said he was different, and that's why he was leaving. And what he's doing is very common.
And it's not just Ezra Klein. Ezra Klein's article got distributed widely by Indiana Democrats.
Well, you know, guess what? I hate to break the news to you, but Evan Bayh has never been a liberal, okay? He's always been a moderate. And, you know, as much as you wanted to push that envelope, that is what he has always been. Okay, and what he is going to be is a voice for moderation on Fox News, which God knows needs it, number one. And number two, the second thing to remember about this is he is not a lobbyist. That's the well-trod path you're talking about, the one that Dan Coats followed. Evan Bayh is not a lobbyist. He is practicing law, and that's a big difference.
The distinction is going to be lost on people, and I think if
it
he runs it,
was lost on
it
you.
Is
you
because
it.
If he runs again, right? I still would make the argument here after hearing you say that.
So he should be unemployed.
No. There are plenty of places there would have been opportunities, but if he runs again, all you have to do is take the campaign that Brad Ellsworth ran against Dan Coats,
let's give Luke a chance.
I'm not going to kick Evan by for making a living. You know, I think it's a distinction without a difference. He got these jobs because he's a senator. He's working with groups that are lobbying.
He also ran the state of Indiana, lobbying on issues,
whether he officially registers himself or not. His two great sins, though, with the liberals are this. One, he was a Democrat senator, likely to get reelected, and he stepped out, and now Republicans in that seat, and they don't like that. Secondly, by stepping on Fox News, he's validating that news station in a way that the liberals don't like. You know, Evan Bayh's always been a good weather vane. He knows where the viewers are, and it's not surprising he ended up on Fox.
He also knows what the viewers need to hear, and if you listen to the tapes of his appearances on there, he does present the moderate, not the liberal, but the moderate view, which is what he's always held.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, what do you think of Evan Bayh's recent career moves? Your choices are A, good for him, B, he can't return to political office, C, I feel betrayed. Last week's question was, how will the Democratic walkout affect your vote in the next election? 49% said I'm more likely to vote Republican. 45% said I'm more likely to vote Democratic. 5% said no effect. 1% said I'm less likely to vote. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. This was a big week for Governor Mitch Daniels, who was the featured Republican at the Washington Gridiron Dinner. He then went on Meet the Press to talk about, among other things, government spending.
I would simply say this. The financial and fiscal problems facing this country are of a level that I believe threatens not just our prosperity, but the survival of our republic. And really, I'm hoping that the Congress and the administration will engage very seriously. I mean, to see them arguing over nickels and dimes like this is, especially from the vantage point of people who are making big changes to make ends meet in state houses, seems a little, it's almost comic.
Comics seem to be his weekend theme. You go back to the gridiron. Ann Delaney, what do you make of the governor's celebrity status at the moment?
Well, I thought he acquitted himself, particularly at the gridiron, pretty well. I mean, I thought that line about governor of a mid-sized state and intelligent and attractive and articulate and three out of four isn't bad, why wasn't he vice president? I thought that was a pretty good line, actually.
He managed to slam himself and Sarah Palin,
Sarah Palin at the same time. Yeah.
And yet he's on Meet the Press, because people think he's going to run for president, but he's still not giving any indication.
Well, it's hard to get elected president without trying. I mean, you know, he's certainly appearing on many of these shows. He's not building the kind of traditional base in Iowa and New Hampshire and other things that he would have to do to make that next step. You know, you look out at the Republican landscape, I mean, clearly Governor Daniels is well positioned to make a run, and we may just be seeing the beginnings of that.
You'd hope somebody's keeping a scrapbook, figuratively, because I can't believe the positive press he has, the accolades from the left, the right. I mean, he's the thinking man's candidate. He's the moderate. I mean, you couldn't buy if he had hired a PR consultant and said, I want to become, you know, this image, craft this image, this is my brand. It's been delivered to him, and it's been impressive.
Wait till he announces.
Well, I was going
that's exactly
what I was going to ask. If he becomes a candidate, does all that change?
Yep. In one heartbeat, and you know, he'll have a lot of capital to spend, but it'll get spent pretty quickly because the focus, the intensity of the focus, will be so much greater once he becomes a declared candidate.
Which means that if he actually wants to run, it makes sense for him to hold out to some degree.
It does,
right?
To a certain extent, but after a while, there are no draft movements in this anymore, right. And after a while, the momentum builds. In the meanwhile, he's got a problem with that ad that he did, saying he's never going to run again, and now he's changing his mind.
He has handled this brilliantly, though. You really have to say, from a political perspective,
he's handled this brilliantly. If he's going to be the nominee, he has to get up. I take him at his word.
He said he's focused on being governor. He's been very focused and active in the recent months. But when it comes to this presidential campaign, one of my favorite adages in life is you don't have to outrun the bear, just the camper standing next to you. And when you look at the other campers in this race, I mean, he has a very good chance if he jumps
in. But then he has to come in and settle the dispute in Indiana, which may be the longest running walkout, which he's not doing if he's concentrating on
that. Does that make him a target? Are the Democrats doing this in part to hold him back?
It has nothing to do with him.
And does the presidential stuff make him a target from the other angle?
Well, I think the national Democrat groups have taken an interest in this in part because of his potential run for presidency.
Finally, back to the State House, where one Republican has something to show for the Democratic walkout. Milo Smith of Columbus started growing a beard the day the walkout began.
Milo Smith always had a mustache, but he's only grown a beard once before. Yet he thought the Democratic walkout deserved a reaction.
So I decided this would be a protest beard, and I wasn't going to shave it off until the Democrats came back to work. And I've also said I hope I don't look like Rip Van Winkle when they return.
Yeah, Luke Messer, what happens first, the Democrats return or Milo Smith shaves?
I hate to put this pressure on Milo, but, I mean, he's a man of his word, and he's not going to shave till they come back.
Does he look good in a beard?
I think there are a number of Democrats, when they come back, who will happily take up a collection to take him to the barber. And it will be good for his print media going forward.
He's anxious. He's been calling Urbana asking if it's okay to shave.
There may be some straight razors wielded, but I'm not sure it's not to shave people.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Luke Messer, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.